Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, I have, for the holiday season, a few books that I'm going to give as gifts this year. Are you giving some books? You like giving books as gifts? We have lots of suggestions for you today with our guest, Daniel Golden. He is the owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, and he has some great ideas, great suggestions for you during this holiday season, and we'd like to hear from you. Do you need a suggestion for someone on your list? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Daniel Golden, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It is such a pleasure to be with you, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you back. Just a pandemic question to start things off. How is it going with you and other independent booksellers?
Well, the rules seem to be that the rules change every day. And so the good thing was there were lots and lots of good books that came out this year. We were a little worried when publishers started postponing a lot of books in the spring and many of them into next year. But that didn't seem to matter. There were plenty of books that came out. Across the country, you're seeing every kind of configuration in bookstores, depending on what part of the country they're in, what kind of virus rates there are, and how rules are affecting them from either both the government or self-directed. So we have a little bit of browsing, 4 hours a day with just 10 people. Most bookstores have this really great website that's done through the American Booksellers Association, but we were not prepared for the amount of orders, even though we knew we'd be overwhelmed with orders on our website. So we knew, but we didn't know. And so some stores are having to take down their websites or, you know, have deadlines because we're behind. And then phone orders are great, but nobody can catch up, you know, or we don't have 700 hands. Our robotics division is still in development. And it's now, you know, waiting outside is cold. So any way you do it, you have to say someone who wants to order from a bookstore loves an independent bookstore. And so we're just grateful. But, you know, you have to have a good sense of humor about it. Some stores have closed if they've gotten positive tests, you know, for a bit while they do their deep cleaning and get tested.
No. Yeah. Well, this seems like the perfect time to bring in Barb from Wabino. Barb, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Dan. I'm calling because I am a regular shopper of the Boswell Books Long Distance, and I cannot find a better service than Boswell Books when it comes to needing a book. Forget that Amazon crap. Let's keep these indie books in business. Dan, your staff does the most wonderful job. I called and ordered my book, and within 2 days for $4, it's mailed to me. It's the best. Everyone, books at Boswell.
Well, that is amazing, Barbara. We're so grateful. And we will have that $4 shipping back, but at this point, we're not doing the media mail because we talked to the post office and they said we were following up on some shipments. And this is a true story. I talked to the postal person. I said, I have a question for you. He said, I know the answer. And I said, I haven't asked it. He said, doesn't matter. And I said, so I had this customer email me. They were doing their tracking and it said delayed. He said, it's in a trailer. He said, we're overwhelmed. So I was like, wow, you did know the answer to that question. So what we did is to make sure for our website, we had to turn off our media mail. So we're shipping priority. Within Wisconsin, we're only shipping for one more day priority. And so in order to override that and say, I don't really want my books until after Christmas, you kind of have to call us. Because it's really hard to talk to people on a website because they don't read the things that they're not interested in, and nobody's interested in hearing they're not going to get their book at Christmas. So we're trying to help things along and not – we don't want people mad at us. We want people like Barb who are like us So we're not going to do everything right, but we're trying. So
Barb, thanks much for calling. Appreciate your call indeed. Well, other callers online, but let's start and take a look at some of the books you put together for us. Did you have any criteria in mind when you compiled it?
Yes. The first thing I said to myself is, I don't want to repeat myself from the last time I was on. So I listened to the show again. And then I tried to have different categories because there's lots of different people who like things. I tend to be good about talking about hardcover fiction. So I do focus on that, especially because I find in Wisconsin Public Radio, the focus is generally on nonfiction writers. And so this is some place where I have something to add. There have been a couple of really great books in every category. So I was looking a little at best of lists. So I'm always interested in, what shows up on the awards, because our customers tend to like the New York Times top 10 of the year, the Washington Post. Now the Wall Street Journal has just released their top 10. So, and when something's on multiple lists, that's particularly interesting to us. So for example, why don't I talk about one of the books? Why not? Homeland Elegies by Ayat Akhtar. So that I love talking about that book because it's got a Wisconsin connection. It's actually not Ayat, it's Ayat, but I'm a terrible pronouncer of all languages, so equal opportunity, including English, I might say. But Ayat, this is his second novel. His first book was American Dervish, which was a lot about growing up in Brookfield, Wisconsin, the suburb of Milwaukee. This book is very different, but it still has some Wisconsin. It's auto fiction. So the protagonist in the book is Mr. Akhtar, but it's not necessarily true. And this is a little confusing to some people who read it and some people who interview him. So he posits this idea. It starts off by him talking about his father. His father had befriended President Donald Trump when he had a health ailment and got to know him. And this sort of spins off into multiple stories about identity, about politics, about immigration, about everything. It is sort of a book that will make everybody a little bit angry, but it's amazing. It's very much like his plays. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner for Disgrace, one of his plays. And Ron Charles, when reviewing the book, said, he thought he's going to get a second Pulitzer for this. Well, I don't know, but Ron Charles did make sure that the book was in the Washington Post top 10 of the year. I will note that the three authors that I compare him to are Philip Roth, who I know Akhtar has talked about one of his influences, Salman Rushdie, there's references to the Satanic Verses in his book, and Zadie Smith, who is a master at auto fiction, which is this kind of toes the line between memoir and fiction. So it's kind of a circular book. It doesn't have, you have to be a reader who's willing, there's plot, but you have to be willing to kind of not necessarily like your plot linear. It's funny, it's philosophical, and so there you go.
And the title again?
It's Homeland Elegies by Ayat Akhtar.
Homeland Elegies. All
right.
Well, Eugene in Iola has something to contribute. Let's go there. Hi, Eugene.
Well, good morning, Larry. I got a book I would like to suggest. The title is Eat Like the Animals, What Nature Teaches Us About the Science of Healthy Eating. It's by David Rubenheimer, PhD, and Stephen J. Simpson, PhD. They're both from Australia. And what he says in there, animals know how to balance their diets, but humans don't. The book is very, very good. It's copyright 2020.
Daniel, are you familiar with Eat Like the Animals?
I looked at, we've carried a copy of the book. It's from a major publisher. One of the things that I find about gift giving is it's hard to buy an advice book for somebody else without implying that you're criticizing them. That's all I have to say about that.
But if you want to read it yourself.
Right. Or a lot of people come in with wish lists. We have a wish list program. Some people come in with somebody else's wish list program. So it's not unlikely to see that book on a lot of wish lists. But I just say if I just have that caveat.
Okay, Eugene, thank you. Oh, man. Esty in Madison will give you a chance. Hi, Esty.
Hi, good morning. I would like to recommend two books. One is Over Story by Richard Powers. And if you buy it as a present, I recommend you buy it for someone who has time, someone probably who doesn't have kids in the house and so forth, because it's about 750 pages. But it's one of these books that you just can't put down. And it's also, you can learn so much by reading it, even though it's fiction. It's amazing fiction. But you learn about trees. You learn words that you don't know. And you also learn some of the history of this country, because it's based on things that actually happened in what's known as Redwood Summer, when activists were trying to protect the Redwoods trees from the corporations that were just logging the entire, would have logged the entire population of these ancient beautiful trees if not for that movement. So that's an outstanding book that I really recommend. And the other one I'm reading right now, I'm about two-thirds through it, it's called Dick and King Kong by James McBride. Again, fiction based on the true, I suppose, on the real way that people live and have lived in the housing projects in New York. And one thing that is amazing about this book is it seems as though McBride set up to write, like, in every possible genre. There's one chapter where I just couldn't stop laughing. There are chapters that are just heartbreaking. There is star-crossed lovers. There's comedy of errors. It's all in there, but it's all put together so well that, again, another book that I am not able to put down, and highly, highly recommended.
Well, thank you very much for calling, Esty. Comments on the James McBride book?
I have a comment for each. So, yes, James McBride, Deacon King Kong, he's, you know, a tremendous writer. He's won many awards. He, you know, ever since his memoir, The Color of Water, and his relationship with his mom and his background as a jazz musician, he's become one of the outstanding writers of the United States. And the new book was an Oprah Book Club pick, I believe, and it was also New York Times top 10 for the year. I am making my way through all the top 10, and I never got to read it, I'm sad to say, but it's definitely going to be on my list. I want to say something about Overstory. Now, I think we've even talked about the Overstory on this show. I know, sure you have, but I will say, yeah. I have something exciting to add, which is there's a new book coming out next August called Damnation Spring by Ash Davidson. Yes, Larry, we really read far ahead. Publisher's been sending out manuscripts, super enthusiasm, and we already had the person who read the Overstory first in our store just finished the manuscript and couldn't stop talking about how much he loved it. It's actually, how should I say, you know, it's an environmental novel, but it's different in that it's not obviously a repeat, but it is about being profoundly shaped by the environment. It's about a logging town. And for example, one of the early reads and recommendations on the book is from Anthony Mara, the author of Constellation of Vital Phenomena. Lots of really great advanced quotes. And the publishers, I mean, it's a major priority. And the reads are coming through. So I want to say to SD, you need to put that on your wish list because you're going to love it.
Daniel Golden, owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, our guest today. Jill Nadeau's our producer, by the way. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at books for reading and books for giving on the show today with our guest, Daniel Golden. Great to have him back. He owns Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. It's always so much fun to have him with us. He's got a whole list of recommended books. You may have a recommendation, or you may have a question about what to get for that niece or some other relative on your list. Give a call, 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. One of the books, Daniel, you had on your list was The Cold Millions by Jess Walter.
Oh,
tell us about that book.
Oh, so great. Really terrific, top-notch historical fiction. I've always said Jess Walter never writes the same book twice or even the same kind of book twice. I was a little nervous because I love, love, love Beautiful Runes, number one New York Times bestseller, set in two time periods, you know, part of it in like 1960 Italy, very romantic. So I started this book, which was about two brothers in 1909 Spokane. An older brother who's kind of, he calls himself a hobo because he does work. You know, there is a distinguished, the hobo versus the bum versus the tramp, you know, three different things. And his younger brother who chases after him. The story is inspired by the IWW, which is the Wobblies, the early union free speech movement. And so he used like that as the background and did a lot of research, but he makes the story his own. It's a story about friendship. It's a story about romance. It is just a spectacular novel. And it starts out a little slower than Beautiful Runes. But by the end, the thing I love about it is he's a top-notch writer, top 10 for the year on the Washington Post, another Ron Charles favorite. But he also can pack emotional. He's not afraid of emotion. And by the end of the book, you are so blown away. It is like the best coda to a book I have read in years. I want to say it's also the Spokaniest book that I have ever read. And I've read Sherman Alexie, who writes a lot about Spokane a lot. But it made me, you know, I can't go anywhere. And I'm like, I started looking at flights to Spokane. Can I drive to Spokane? It's a beautiful town. It's got a lot of personality. The brothers were not the center of the story originally. Originally, the historical character who's in the book, who is, let me just get my, I've forgotten for a second, so I have to kind of look at my, because I wrote it down for myself, and then, of course, I lost it. Can I do it? Can I do it? Can I do it? Here it is. Elizabeth Gurley Flynn. She was this teenage, I mean, she was like 19 years old, barn burning in these union movements. She was pregnant. She was just one of a kind. And that was his inspiration for the story. And then he realized later the story wasn't about her. Let me just say, he started this book before Beautiful Runes. So he's the kind of guy who takes many, many years on every book. And he also is a perfectionist. So the books only come out like every 5 to 7 years.
No.
One last thing about it, and then we move on. I said to somebody, I read this in a review and I started using this. It is positively Steinbeckian. Like, it's a contemporary take on John Steinbeck. And I had a customer, we were chatting in the outside waiting to come in. She said, "You told me that and you were so on target." That's exactly what the book is.
And it's The Cold Millions by Jess Walter. Well, you have one I haven't seen, Big Girl, Small Town, Michelle Galen.
Very interesting book. I actually just finished it finally yesterday. It's a paperback original, and I one of the things about paperbacks is there have been all the pundits were saying we were moving more towards paperbacks. We wouldn't see any hardcovers anymore. But one thing we found out on when we became basically a web order business when we were closed for browsing is that paperbacks had a much harder time selling. People were turning to hardcovers because of the media attention they got. But this is a paperback original, so it should have gotten the media attention, but it's coming a little late. And December 1st, let me just say, is not the easiest pub date because people are already looking at year-end stuff and they sort of don't make the window. But I heard from the book editor at the Journal Sentinel in Milwaukee how much he loved the book. He wound up just putting it on his top 10 for the year. And he convinced me to read it. And I loved it too. And we actually set up an event on December 29th. It is set in Northern Ireland, right at the border, about 10 years after the Troubles ended. And it's almost a diary of a young woman who works in a chip shop. And it's in very heavily in dialect, which I sometimes don't really love, but I just love the dialect because the way the words came out, they were just completely different. Like, it wasn't cliche to me. I've read a lot of books about the Troubles. I hadn't read a lot of books in dialect in the Troubles. And she's on the spectrum a little. Her father has disappeared. Her uncle was murdered. Her mother has a lot of health and troubles and also addiction issues. And she's just like, it's every hour documented. And as the people come in the shop, so much of the interesting thing is just like her observations about the various people and their stories. So the book was actually a finalist, I think, for the Irish Book Prize. And I think the Customer's Novel Prize. And I guess my favorite critic must be Ron Charles, because I'm quoting him again. He also wrote a book. He said, wrote a wonderful review. He said, best of the year books are still in, but wait, there's another contender. So that was very sweet, because he actually also not put it on, but you know what can you do? So it's A Big Girl, Small Town by Michelle Gallen. She's super charming. There's a video that you can Google where she talks about the slang. Like, she gives you like examples of slang and what they mean. And even if you don't read the book, you'll kind of love it. So, would you go to Milwaukee? I'm excited.
Daniel Golden, our guest today. You might want to join in too. Maybe you've got a book that you want to recommend, or maybe you have a question about what should you buy for a particular person during the holiday season. Give a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. One that you have on your list is a Japanese bestseller, and it's
yes.
called Before the Coffee Gets Cold, a book of the year, yeah. I believe.
So this is I haven't seen it on too many like best books of the year, except for one, which is a very important one for Boswell, which is our buyer Jason's best book of the year. So we're selling it really well, but it ties in to a lot of trends that we're seeing in what people are liking. People are really love time travel novels, and they really love books that are sort of philosophical in nature. So, you know, last year's hit that turned into this year's phenomenon is The Boy, the Goat, the da 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 da, by Charlie McKenzie. I can't remember the order, but you all know it, and you probably can't find it because it's selling like crazy. But another book that's really popular is called The Midnight Library by Matt Haig, also really hard to find, about a woman who can live multiple lives by going to this library. So in this one, so there's this cafe in Japan, a basement cafe, no windows, but always this kind of sunny. And it is set in urban legend that if you go to this cafe, you can go back in time. Of course, there's a couple of rules. A, you can only go back in time in the cafe. Two, so the person you want to see to kind of make amends or tell them something you didn't get to tell them had to have been in the cafe at one point. You can only sit in one chair, and that's a problem because that chair is almost always occupied by a ghost. And finally, you must finish your conversation with that person before the coffee gets cold. So it's got a real... I've read a lot of Japanese fiction, and I'm even saying that lighter, really light Murakami, but certainly there's a book that was a phenomenon a couple of years ago called Convenience Store Woman that it's definitely similar to. And if people go back a little further, Banani Yoshimoto's had a bunch of novels. She was kind of the thing in the 90s, I would say. And it's kind of got that aesthetic. It's very charming. It's very quirky, as you can guess from the setup. But it's very emotional as the people try to find people or make, you know, regret things that they asked and things like that. And the people who work in the cafe are brought into it, and one of them goes back in time. And so it's got a, you know, and it's not a long, the narrative isn't a through narrative. It almost feels like, you know, just one incident after another. But they're tied together more than a book of short stories. So that's that.
Oh, great. Well, Kim in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Kim, hi.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. I was calling about a book that I just read called Jamie and Bubby. It's a book about people's pronouns. And it's a hardcover book for, I would say, anybody from about the ages of 3 to 99, given the pertinence of the subject matter. And what I loved about Jamie and Bubby, a book about people's pronouns is the full title, is that actually Jamie, the character, and Bubby, who is, I guess, the grandmother, Jamie actually teaches their grandmother about not assuming people's genders and not assuming their pronouns, and actually throughout a special day teaches grandma about everything from who the person at the coffee shop is to who the male person is to everybody that they come across in their daily lives. And it's so lovely because instead of the grandma teaching the child is sort of the person that is being the educator. And it's also part of a series, which I love. The first book was called Jamie is Jamie. And that was about really being a child in the world and having the freedom to be whoever you want to be and live in the world as a free person who is not gendered by other people. So I love it. I love it. And I would really recommend it as a holiday gift and to educators, because I think it's really hard. I was a school teacher for many years, a kindergarten teacher, and I think it can be really hard to introduce these things in a way that isn't prescriptive and or boring for children. There's a really beautiful storyline to this book. So I just wanted to share that.
Kim, thank you so much. Daniel, are you familiar with it?
Free Spirit is the publisher. They're a great publisher. They really do. Kim was right on target. They do really focus on educators more than bookstores. But the book is definitely available if that's a book that's really important to you, and I'm sure it is for a lot of folks. It's really easy to order in from your local bookstore. So we call it full trade returnable, which is sort of the gatekeeper to whether a bookstore can carry a book. Not every book is. So great to hear that.
Thank you, Kim. Appreciate it. Sandy in Wausau, we'll go to you. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Oh, my goodness. I just got done reading a book, which is definitely not a new book. Its copyright was 1984, and it's called Cold Sassy Tree. And it's a story of a town in the South called Cold Sassy Tree, and it actually was told by the young boy about what all happened in Cold Sassy Tree. And that town was just a whirlpool of gossip. And what started the whole thing is that Will's grandpa married a woman half his age, and that started all the meanness and gossip. And but it was a book that it hurt to turn the last page. And if you're in the mood for something that will just open your heart and give you a warm feeling, this is the book to read.
Well, thank you very much, Sandy. And I know you're familiar with that book, Daniel.
I read it, how many years ago would that be? 35?
A long time ago.
I read it.
But it still holds up a bit.
Sure.
I read it a long time ago, too, but now I'm listening to books on CDs, so I got it again, and I listened to it this time, and I'm telling you, I loved it so much.
Well, thank you very much, Cold Sassy Tree. Thank you, Sandy. Karen in Delafield, you have a question.
Yeah, I do. I'm just looking for a suggestion. I give my ex-husband a book every year, and he's a reader that loves to read about the Founding Fathers. Mostly I've given him nonfiction, but I'm just really looking for something different that I think he's read pretty much everything. So possibly.
So one of those things nowadays is I don't know kind of folks, I would probably then take the time to say, what other books have he read? Because I kind of, especially with history nowadays, I kind of gauge, what's the politics of the history that you're reading? Are you reading, very traditional history? Are you reading contemporary history that's kind of reframing things, where you're reading maybe Isabel Wilkerson's Cast, or more likely, or her previous book, The Warmth of Other Suns. If somebody is a traditional reader, one book that's sometimes off their radar, one author, is Nathaniel Philbrick. He is the thing that ties his books together generally. He was, a sailor. And so almost all of his books have a water element to them. His most popular book is Following the Path of Moby Dick, but he also wrote a book about Mayflower, Bunker Hill. He's written several books about George Washington. And the Revolution, In the Hurricane's Eye, about the Battle of Yorktown. Have you ever tried Nathaniel Philbrick with him?
No, but how do you spell his last name?
P-H-I-L Brick, B-R-I-C-K.
Okay,
they're terrific books.
Great.
They've won some awards. They're accessible, but they haven't been the superstar phenomenon historian books. They're just a little tiny, tiny bit. I don't want him to be insulted because he's done a few events. Tiny bit under the radar. And so he's a nice person for me to recommend who likes traditional American history but has read some of the folks, Joseph Ellis and the people who are always at the top.
Yeah. Karen, thank you. I hope that helped. Appreciate your call very much. You can join in too. Maybe you have a question about a book for someone in your life. Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Judy called with the name of the book, The Boy, the Mole, and the Fox and the Horse.
Yeah, I would say if you come into any bookstore and say, I want that book about the boy and the animals, I think we'll know what you're talking about. it doesn't have an Oxford comma, and I do love that comma there. So I'm it's the name of the book. It's sort of like when some books have ampersands, and if you look it up A-N-D, you can't find it because it doesn't translate. It translates in Google, but not in a lot of other search engines, so...
Carol from Green Bay emailed that she's giving her son a hard copy of The Wind in the Willows, by Kenneth Graham to read to his children. The illustrations by, was it Robert Ingham, are outstanding. Do you know that book?
I do. In fact, it was my former mentor, my mentor, who's now deceased, his favorite children's book. And in fact, we have done, since the book is old enough to be in public domain, we've done a series, some of the illustrations we've used for Boswell over the years feature a character that could be very similar to the Toad, but not the Disney Toad, the original Toad. Yeah. And we did a 10th anniversary. So Boswell's named after James Boswell, the biographer. And we did one with the Toad from The Wind in the Willows as James Boswell. So yeah, I have read it. I also love it. How's that?
All right. Oh, man. Daniel Golden, our guest today. It's great to have him with us. He's the owner of Boswell Book Company in Madison. It's always great to have him along. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234, or email at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at books for reading and giving today with Daniel Golden, owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. It's always so much fun to have him on the show. I could have him on a lot more often. It's great fun. And he's got some great ideas for you, and certainly we're looking for your ideas or your questions as well at 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. You know, one of the native writers I liked a lot this last year was Kelly Jo Ford. I had her on the show for Crooked Hallelujah. Did you like that book, or did you have a chance to read it?
Of course I read it. We talked about it. You said, I'm going to book that. Remember?
I forgot. I should have listened to her.
I have to tell you, there is no more of a treasure. You are the greatest person right now to me in the universe, because there is nothing better than having a bookseller's recommendation recommended back to them. I just want to cry. I want to cry. So I guess in the spirit of that, I'll mention another indigenous author. It's a little different. It's a little more outside your comfort zone, but I thought it was actually a beautiful book. It's called, so if everyone doesn't know the Kelly Jo Ford, I just want to say Crooked Hallelujah, one of my 10 favorite books of the year. Mother-daughter story set on a reservation in Oklahoma and also North Texas, I think. The burden of, what would you say, Larry? You describe it and you do the elevator pitch.
I don't. She, the burden of growing up the way she did and the relationship she had with her mother and the rest of her family. Difficult at times, but it's a wonderful, and I think now that I think about it, we probably got her on because you recommended her and we got her on the show.
Like I said, warms my heart. So let me just say, I am hand selling that book still, and now I'm gonna say, you know, now I have a whole bunch of more people I say, you know, Larry Mueller recommended her, so I put it in their hands. So this other book is called Come Home, Indio, and it actually has a Wisconsin connection. It's a graphic memoir. So it's this guy, Jim Terry, who's the writer, he writes comic books. I mean, he draws comic books. He doesn't write at all. But now he wrote his own story. He's the child of a dad who was from Chicago, Irish-American musician. And his mom was a Ho-Chunk from outside Wisconsin Dells. He actually grew, they're both kind of wandered a lot when they were young. And so he's actually born in California. And then the family returned to the Chicago suburbs. But his parents had a lot of issues. They both had substance abuse issues, drinking issues, and they wound up divorcing. And he had a lot of trouble not, you know, overcoming that and eventually falls prey. But also he has a lot of trouble figuring out who he is in the world. You know, what, and he doesn't feel like he fits in with the white suburban kids, And when he goes to the reservation to see his mom's family, he doesn't feel like he's there either. And so it's him sort of coming to terms through some troubled relationships and things like that, and finally does find his purpose as an artist, and also went on a journey with some other indigenous people. So it's the artwork is great, and he's super charming, I mean, maybe you should read and have him on, but I'm just kidding. But
I've written it down.
Yeah. A lot of it's actually set around Wisconsin Dells, so I'll say that. So that's my recommendation.
And while I'm thinking about it, I did want to mention that we are starting on this program a book club.
Ooh.
And we're going to focus on travel for the coming year, sort of. And so we're looking at books relating to travel. And the book we're starting is one that's been out a while. It's called The Geography of Bliss by Eric Weiner. And so we'll travel to the happiest places on Earth, even though we can't travel.
That's right. I will say that the worst sales plummet through the coronavirus has been travel guides. I mean, more than anything. And we don't really even know what to do. My buyer was saying, I don't know what to buy. But travel narratives, like what you're going to do, have been actually very popular. So looking forward to more of them, because that's the only way I get to go anywhere either.
Well, we'll be getting some more about our book club up. We don't have anything up on our website yet, but we'll have it up soon. And I think Eric's going to be with us in March, maybe March 25th, somewhere around there. We'll have a lot more about that as time goes on. But let's
Very
take
cool.
another call. Sandra in Mount Pleasant, it's your turn. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Karen was looking for something about the Founding Fathers. I just finished Walter Isaacson's biography of Ben Franklin, and I really enjoyed it. And Walter Isaacson, I read his biography of Leonardo da Vinci, and he actually has six. He has Steve Jobs, Kissinger, Einstein, and I just like the way he writes his biographies. He did a lot of personal things, which are fun, and new things that you were surprised about, since you think you may have known that person somewhat.
Person. Sandra, thank you so much. Do you know that...
Oh, sure. Walter Isaacson, super popular. You know, the thing about history, I find, is that there's sort of two camps. There's the people who approach it from the academic side, and many of them cross over. But some of the most popular historians kind of come from the journalism side. And I believe Walter Isaacson was the editor-in-chief of Time magazine.
Yeah.
And so back when you would say, oh... So that really does it. You know, I would say he doesn't write too often, but I would say his cohort in a way is John Meacham, who is now an academic, I think, at Vanderbilt and someplace else, but I believe was at Newsweek at one point. And he has a very popular book out on John Lewis called, I think, His Truth is Marching On. It is. I have confirmed that. So John Lewis has also written a Bush biography. He wrote with a country music person. I mean, he's all over the place, but also accessible historian because obviously when you're writing for a different audience as a journalist and an academic has to learn how to talk to the general public, whereas a journalist just has to learn how to write history.
Oh, boy. Robert in Decorah, Iowa. It's your turn. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Yeah, I would like to recommend a book that I got pretty interested in. And it was, first I saw it as it's an anime, but it was an anime show. But then I got to read, they had books for it. My kids told me about it. And it's a fascinating story of a group of people in the in a virtual reality world.
And it's Sword Art Online?
Yeah, the name on it is called Sword Art Online. And the book was, they have a whole series of books. Basically, it's a story of like 10,000 people are started a game and realized that something had gone very wrong. And they follow two kids, 14 and a 15-year-old, as they go through floor by floor and trying to save everybody. And they've a big series of books on it. I'm retired, and I read about 8 novels of it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's pretty cool, Robert. Daniel, are you familiar with it?
Well, no. But I will say, I'm not the manga reader in the store. We have at least two booksellers who read a lot of manga, and there's certainly a whole generation of folks who read manga and watch anime. And the beauty is that you could really read nothing else, and because the library is so broad, I mentioned that Midnight Library book, which is like the never-ending list of books that have different alternatives to your life, and I feel like manga is like that too. So you find a series and you're deep in it for a long time. So it's exciting.
Robert, thank
I love
you.
The idea of this retired guy reading it. So
yeah, thank you so much. Jonathan and Amory, your turn. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi. Love your shows, Larry.
Thank you.
The book I'm recommending is called Border Country, subtitled The Journals of Howard Green. And he was he owned a pharmaceutical company in Milwaukee. And from 1906 to 1916, he took a series of wilderness trips. He starts out on the rivers in Wisconsin 3 or 4 weeks at a time. And he lugs along a tremendous amount of photographic equipment and shoots wonderful photographs. And he's got his kids with him and some of his contemporaries. And after they do some rivers in Wisconsin, they go up to what is now the BWCA in the Quetico and paddle around and basically explore and invent camping in the period of 1906 to 1916. And I found it to be just a fantastic trip back in time. The pictures are marvelous. He keeps a journal of all the trials and tribulations, and they don't have good maps. And I'm reading it for the second time. And for anyone who has an interest in wilderness canoe travel and interest in railroads, historical railroads, it's a fascinating account.
Border Country.
Yeah. I think we did an event with her. It's with Martha Green Phillips, his daughter, I think. Yes, we did in 2017. I was like, wow, that sounds really familiar. I feel like I've read part of that. So, yes.
All right. Thank you.
We did. It's hard to get now. I will say some of these books, especially with illustrations, they have a life. But afterwards, they're very difficult to reprint. There's not that many American publishers that do like gift books. A lot of it's in China. And so it becomes, there are a few. We have some in the Midwest, but it becomes expensive to reprint these things. And so there might be an ebook edition. I'm not really sure. I'm guessing with all the illustrations, it wouldn't make a very good audio download, but you can always find it on the aftermarket. So
yeah, always on the aftermarket. Well, photos reminds me of picture books. What does a picture book need to have to make it good?
Oh, that's an interesting question. For kids or adults? Can we go with kids? So we had that kids podcast, so I thought I can do kids. You know, it's interesting. Things, the trends change. So right now, for the last few years, authors were being told to reduce the number of words. Because the simple thing is a good story with good artwork. How's that? But as I heard from a number of authors who were being told that the market for picture books, they were aging down, that kids wanted to jump to early readers earlier. So I saw that for a number of years. And I feel like I'm seeing a bit of reversal, but it's very different. I call them the busy, busy picture books because because they've got a lot of text that's ancillary to the plot, and they remind me a little of a Richard Scarry book that has a lot of asides. So the number of words, I think, is going up again in some picture books. I mean, not all, because there's the ones that are targeted to the very youngest. I should note that Kevin Henkes, the Madison writer-illustrator, he's a master of that. His new book, Sunflower Lion, is really for the simplest, the youngest kids, but it's great for learning to read. I just want to say my great-nephew, Gordon, read part of the book to me over the phone yesterday. So I love Sunflower Lion. But a book that's an example of what I'm seeing of this busyness is a book called The Oboe Goes Boom, Boom, Boom. And it is a new book that we're selling really well. And it's about a conductor of probably an elementary school, maybe junior high school, who is introducing the instruments to his class. But the drum, the young girl who's playing the drum, keeps interrupting while he's trying to talk about the other instruments. So we have this story.
And we're going to talk some more about this story after we take a look at the news. We'll be back with Dan Golden of Boswell Book. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mehler here. Fun to have Daniel Golden stop by to talk with us. He's the owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. Talking with him about books for reading and books for giving. And I hope you'll join in the conversation. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And I made you stop there at as we went for news and talking about picture books. Anything you want to add to that, Daniel?
Oh, yeah. So that Boom 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 book. So many cool things about this book. It teaches you how all the instruments work. And I played instrument and band and orchestra in junior high and high school, the flute. They tried to talk me out of it. I wouldn't listen. And I learned how all the instruments work. On top of it, all the kids who are playing the instruments are based on famous musicians. So the trumpet player is Valeda Snow, who was in Louis Armstrong's band, and he called the second greatest trumpet player in the world. And the flute player was Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull. And if you want, I can sing you the flute part of Bungle in the Jungle, but I think maybe we should pass. And then the last surprise is so great. Who the conductor is, I'm not going to say, but they can find out. So anyway, that was very cool. So that's what's going on with picture books.
The oboe goes boom, boom, boom. All right. Well, let's take Paul and Madison. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yeah, I was just calling to suggest two book series. One being Everworld by K.A. Applegate. It was back in the 2000s that it actually came out. It's about four teens trying to save their friend from a different world that actually is based off of mythology. They have Egyptian, Greek, pretty much all of them in there. And then the other book series is the Lorien series by Pittacus Lore. That one takes place with the I Am Number 4 series. There was actually a movie out a few years back on it. It just didn't do very well. But there's about 10 books in that series as well.
So a couple of series. Daniel?
Well, I have sad news for folks that the K.A. Applegate book that's called Aftermarket because those books are out of print. That said, K.A. Applegate turns out to be Catherine Applegate, and she has lots of books in print, including the one and only Ivan and the sequel, the one and only Bob, which are very popular, Crenshaw and Wishtree. Now, they're very different kinds of books. They're not exciting adventure books, but she has a recent series that is an animal series. It's not quite what he was looking for, but it's more in that vein of an adventure and a series. And it's the Endling series. So that's what I would, you can, like I said, you can find them. But what I find is sometimes the books are like one penny, and that's a good price. But but sometimes if they're harder to get, they might be more expensive. Now, the Pittacus Lore books are still available. The one you want to start with, for those who aren't, are since he's read all of them, there's a number of different series, but you want to start with I Am Number 4, and that book is considered a teen book, young adult, older young adult. So I would say recommended age is 14 and up.
All right, there we go. Thank you again, Paul. Reggie in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Reggie.
Hi, I just wanted to recommend a book called The Truth Machine. Now, there are two Truth Machines. So it's the one by James L. Halperin. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but it's a fantastic science fiction book about bringing a young child who's suffered some trauma, but he's a prodigy, and makes a truth machine that eventually everyone wears. You have to pass a test to get a job or a license, and it gets rid of a whole lot of social problems, but brings up some problems for the creator along the way. So I think it's a really great read.
All right. The Truth Machine.
Well, the sad truth is I don't read science fiction, but I do. I usually know if we've got something really hot that our buyer, Jason, who reads history. He reads, he reads Before the Coffee Gets Cold, and he reads science fiction. He runs our science fiction book club. So, you can always see their recommendations on our website, and they read terrific stuff. They often win, you know, there's a number of awards, the Locus, and there's a few different prizes. And I read some speculative stuff, but if it gets too hardcore, I just get lost. So,
well, Bernie in Torconi, it's your turn. Hi, Bernie.
Hey, Larry. Hi. Hey, I read a book probably 25 years ago, and it was called The Millionaire Next Door. And it's a book I think of more often than not because, you know, we shouldn't look at people and judge them. But what it teaches you is you see the people with all the bling and the fancy stuff, and sometimes those are people that really don't have any real wealth to their name. And then you see the person who wears a very plain $12 watch, an old car with 200,000 miles on it, and those are people that have money in the bank. And it's not to like the book isn't about to teach you how to judge people. It's to try and teach you that, you know, bling isn't necessarily going to do anything for you. So it's an educational book, and it was, I think, pretty well written.
All right. The Millionaire Next Door.
25. Yeah, Warren Buffett, I think people always think of the incarnation of that. You know, middle-class house.
Yeah. Al in Washburn, your turn. Hi, Al.
Your previous caller just talked about a book 25 years old. I'm gonna recommend something that was published in 1973. I don't know if your guest even has it in stock or can get it or get a used copy, but I found it downstairs in my basement a couple of days ago, and I remember buying it at a garage sale. It's called Wisconsin Sketches. This is for people who like a wonderful combination of sketches by Aaron Borod and words by Robert Gard. Two people who were very prominent in artistic activities at UW-Madison for many years. It's a wonderful book. The sketches are great, and for people who like to really get into the meaning of what that sketch is all about or what that part of Wisconsin is all about, I've enjoyed it.
Al, thank you.
It's out of print. Yeah. Now, I will note that there is... If we're talking Wisconsin, there is a lovely book called, and maybe you've even done something with this already, but about the poet laureates called Through This Door, which is edited by Margaret Rosga and Angela Trudell Vasquez, and it is called... Through the Door, Wisconsin and Poems, and it is a collection from Wisconsin's poet laureates. There's always some sort of nice picture book about Wisconsin but I can't think of one at the moment. We're doing pretty well with a number of Milwaukee books out. There's a lovely for regional folks, Anna Lardinoy, who runs the Gothic Milwaukee tours. She has a book called Storied and Scandalous Wisconsin. She's a delightful writer and speaker, and so as long as we're talking regional, I'm giving that one a plug.
All right. Thanks, Al. Pat, in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi, I'd like to recommend a book. It's called Mariposa Road, and mariposa means butterfly. And it's written by Robert Michael Pyle. He's a naturalist and butterfly person from Washington State. And so what he did was he was the first person to do a big butterfly year, which is traditional, I think, or more common in the birders world. And so the book just, you know, talks about Wisconsin is in there too, his year with butterflies and what he recorded. And this year they made a movie from that book called The Dark Divide. And so he's a dear soul, and it's a good book, an important book, and the movie is going to be really good too.
Oh. Yeah, I don't think it's available right now, but you know, it's going to be tough. I hope if someone's writing all these books down for their gift list, they're going to have quite a challenge. I would say.
Well,
may I transition to, as long as we're talking butterflies, can I talk about the explosion of bird books? Like,
yeah,
this is a crazy bird year. And I'm not really sure if everybody said, let's publish a whole bunch of really amazing bird books, or because of COVID, because so many people took up bird watching, our buyer said, found all these really great bird books. But it's really interesting. We have one of the picture books we're selling well is called Snowbirds. And we have there's a new Birds of Wisconsin field guide that came out very late last year that's been selling really well from Charles Hagner. And then there's the one that we're selling the best is What It's Like to Be a Bird.
David Sibley.
Sibley, right. And it's not like a field guide. It's sort of like how birds eat and how they smell and how they hear and how, you know, like all these different, like all the things beyond what would be in a field guide with these beautiful paintings. And I just love it. I think it's so interesting. It reminds me of these kids' coffee table books because it's just got lots and lots and lots of facts. I can see it crossing over really well to a younger kid too. So yeah, no butterflies today for me, but lots of birds.
Well, Wendy Williams' book, The Language of Butterflies, is a nice book. I liked it a lot. We'll have to get David Sibley on to talk about his book too.
I bet that would be amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll give that a shot. John and Saban, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. Speaking of bird books, do you know how many times a hummingbird flaps his wing in 1 second? 100. He would rather flap his wings flying while eating than perch. The book I recommend today would be Michelangelo and the Pope's Ceiling by Ross King. It's early Italian, and he had to serve his apprenticeship as a painter, and nobody liked him because it was so tight-nested guild.
You know that book, Daniel?
I, once again, read it like many, many, many years ago. I'm trying to remember, but maybe 20 years, I think. The author, Ross King, wrote a whole bunch of really interesting sort of, I don't know, they're not exactly micro-histories, but like they're not fiction, but they're sort of histories on the margin. Like, I guess they're micro-histories because they're not broad movements. They really focus down on smaller kind of moments in time that have ramifications, and often about art and architecture. Another one was Brunelleschi's Dome, which I think that was the most popular one he did. So they're good. You can find it.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it. let's see, where are we next here? Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Hi.
Hello. Hey, book people. I found this book at the library recently, and it's from 2016, and it's called Motown, The Sound of Young America by Adam White. And it's this huge book, I mean, like 2 feet tall and a foot and a half wide, and maybe not that big, but it's big. And it has tons and tons of pictures and tons of words, little words. But it's like this huge overview of Motown going way, way back, and it tells you about every single person at Motown with fabulous photos. I just love this book. This was like Christmas for me, just getting this book.
And I just want to say about it that now I'm just like, it's out of print. It's not out of print. There's a paperback. There's a paperback edition that, because of these picture books, it's like they're really hard to reprint. But there's a paperback that came out last year. So it's a $40 paperback, but it's actually available in a bookstore, could get it, or however you order books, could actually get it in for you. I love music books. I don't read too many music biographies, but I've read a lot of music narratives. I wasn't going to talk about it. I read Peter Frampton's memoir this fall. I don't know why. It was called Do You Feel Like I Do or We Do. It was not the song, but he was really interesting. He was like he knew everyone. He's kind of a zealot, and he also he's interesting because he had this incredible rocket to fame, but he actually had a longer takeoff than people know, and he had this amazing afterlife just playing guitar for lots of bands. And his father was David Bowie's art teacher, which was like, how weird is that? So that said, I don't know. I read like one of those a year. Last year I read a Morris Day, who was a friend of Prince. I read his memoir. It featured Prince's ghost very often. But I enjoy.
I like the true crime books a bit. And you've got some good ones. We Keep the Dead Close by Becky Cooper is one.
I do. I was thinking a little about you. I have another book on there too that I was like, what would Larry? But I do like true crime, and booksellers like it too. My buyer recommended to me, as did Maddie, one of our booksellers. It is part of the new wave. I don't know, like true crime's had this big resurgence. It's very popular with young women, and that is partly due to the rise in true crime podcasts. It's one of those things where the whole genre exploded from that. And I would recommend this to readers of I'll Be Gone in the Dark. So it basically, this young journalist named Becky Cooper was in Harvard, and she heard this urban legend or this story about that turned out to be true in parts about a young woman in 1969 who was brutally murdered, who was a Harvard grad student in the anthropology archaeology department. And the person whispered to her and said, and the worst thing is the guy who did it is still teaching here. So this leads her on a many year obsession with trying to figure out what happened. She follows different suspects. The book becomes sort of a history of misogyny in higher education. And unlike a lot of these true crime books, it is also solved by the end. It's not necessarily who you think it is, but it is, like many a good mystery, it's got several twists. She wrote for The New Yorker for a while, which is why she's got some nice quotes from, sorry about that. She's got a very nice quote from Patrick Radden Keefe, the guy who wrote Say Nothing, which was a big phenomenon last year. It was like a cross between history. It was actually a history of the troubles through this one crime. And I was like, that's what got me to read this finally. I was like, Patrick Radden Keefe, I love that book. And so it turned out like you can do the analyzing where the blurbs come from, they did overlap at the New Yorker for a little bit. So that's how she got the end.
How many books do you read a year?
You know, I count. I've been writing down every book I've read since 1982, but secretly it's really 83. But when I make these lists, I tend to try to go back and use my memory a little. So I, on a good year, I'm happy reading 6 books a month, which is about 70, 80 books. It's COVID year. I don't know if you heard about this, but so I read I'm probably going to hit 100 this year, but that's unusually high for me. I have many people who make me feel very bad because they read a lot more than I do.
Wow. But, well, here I thought I was good. I read between 50 and 60.
Larry, you are very good. That's super above average. That's way above average. And a lot of the people who are, they're not, you're reading dense books. Like, so for example, I don't read too many, like, 700-800 page biographies. Some books read much faster. I don't read too much biography. It tends to read very slow for me. I like narrative nonfiction, and I read a lot of fiction, but I read a few kids' books. You know, I don't count a picture book. I don't want people to think I'm cheating. But a middle grade book, like for 8 to 12, if it's mostly words, it goes on the list. Just like
So what are your top, what is the best book in the adult and the best in the, say, the teen, and the maybe the best in the kids?
Oh, I'm pulling my hair out. So I will say my favorite book to sell is because it's so easy, is Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell. It's it posits this idea something we don't know about Shakespeare's life. So he lived through the Black Plague, but he never wrote about it. And his son died of it. His son was named Hamnet. And 4 years after his death, he wrote Hamlet, which is actually the same in Old English. And it's told through the eyes of Shakespeare's wife and children. Shakespeare himself is actually a side character. Beautifully written. Geraldine Brooks wrote the New York Times Review. She's clearly the market for this kind of very beautifully written kind of prose that's based on history, but is like filling in the holes. Book won the Women's Book Prize. Mary Louise Kelly on All Things Considered said her book club read it, and they just asked her if they could just read Hamnet over and over for the next year. It's just like a good, strong core book. The other book that seems to be that not everybody's read yet. And the other book, a couple of the books that have been like phenomenons, we actually mentioned last time. So Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett, which is like, it's one of those books. I have a new thing to sell it though. I say, if Jodi Picoult won the Pulitzer Prize, because it's got that really great plot and issue, but it's also at a higher level. So.
And here we are out of time. It's been a great pleasure, Daniel. Thank you so much for being with us today. And I hope you'll come back and be with us again. It's a pleasure every time.
An honor and a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Daniel Golden of the Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, and he will be back and we'll do this again. Sorry we didn't get to everybody, but thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.